So excited. I've been waiting for this sermon for a long time, and I am thrilled to be able to talk about this today and share with you a little bit. So let's just get started, shall we? Revelation 6, starting right in verse 1, and it starts off here. I watched as the Lamb opened the first of the seven seals, and then I heard one of the four living creatures say in a voice like thunder, "Come." I looked, and there before me was a white horse, and its rider held a bow, and he was given a crown, and he rode out as a conqueror bent on conquest. Feels a little Lord of the Rings-ish, does it not? And then when the Lamb opened the second seal, I heard the second living creature say, "Come." And then another horse came out, but this time it was a fiery red one. And its rider was given power to take peace from the earth and to make people kill each other. It's a pleasant image, is it not? To him was given a large sword. Now when the Lamb opened the third seal, I heard the third living creature say, "Come." And I looked, and there before me was a black horse. And its rider was holding a pair of scales in his hand. And then I heard what sounded like a voice among the four living creatures saying, 2 pounds of wheat for a day's wages, and 6 pounds of barley for a day's wages, and do not damage the oil or the wine. Does that sound like you? Please, whatever you do, I don't care about the grain, I don't care about the barley. Oil and wine, please keep it safe. And then we keep going here. When the Lamb opened the fourth seal, I heard the voice of the fourth living creature say, "Come." And I looked, and there before me was a pale horse. And its rider was named Death. And Hades was following close behind him. And they were given power over a fourth of the earth to kill by sword, famine, and plague, and by the wild beasts of the earth. Now, when he opened the fifth seal, I saw under the altar the souls of those who had been slain because of the word of God and the testimony that they had maintained. And they called out in a loud voice, "How long, sovereign Lord, holy and true, until you judge the inhabitants of the earth and you avenge our blood?" Well, then each of them was given a white robe, and they were told to wait a little longer until the full number of their fellow servants, their brothers and sisters, were killed just as they had been. Now, if you read this and you are not bothered by the imagery and the words, maybe you're not reading this correctly. Yeah, you might need to spend a little more time sitting with these passages, with these images that are given here in Revelation, because we just read about 11 verses all about death and destruction. If it doesn't bother you, something's a little off. But see here, this is John's intention. This is what John's doing. All this over-the-top metaphorical language and imagery that we find all throughout the book of Revelation, well, it's put there because John is trying to wake his readers up. John is trying to jar his readers and remind them of the seriousness of this message that he's bringing. And if we remember back a couple of weeks, Revelation, this book, is being written to a group of first century Christians who are about to be persecuted because of their pursuit of Christ. And so what John's doing here is he's writing in a way that matches the intensity of what these readers are about to experience. John is writing in a way that honors the situation. He's not just making light of the fact that these Christians, this group, is about to go through persecution, but he's actually fully entering into it, and he's giving it the gravity and the weight and the seriousness that it deserves. Now, we talked early on, I think it was the second week, we said that Revelation is actually a non-violent book. And I understand at first glance, especially when we read 11 verses like this, we're like, what? Like, did you not just read those verses too? But in actuality, Revelation is a nonviolent book. Because what John is doing is John, throughout the entire book of Revelation, is he is subverting violence. And he is showing the folly and the futility of violence. John is showing what happens when this way of violence becomes the normal way in which we go and live life. He's showing what happens when we walk down a path of violence. And so what John is doing here throughout the entire book of Revelation, he's submitting, he's giving this protest against the way of empire, against this way of exploitation, this way of conquering, this way of bringing the sword. Now, specifically here, it's directed towards the Roman Empire, but this protest against the way of empire, it could stand in for any empire that has ever existed throughout human history, any empire that exists now, and any empire that will eventually exist. And he's taking a stand against this way of empire, this way of violence, and he is saying, there is a better way to live. There is a way that is stronger, a way that is more endurable. There is a way that is more life-giving than the way of the sword. This is what the book of Revelation is all about. And so sometimes when we're given these messages that Revelation is a book all about violence, sometimes we need to move beyond the literalness, and we need to actually dig a little bit deeper to see what is truly going on here. So that's been my goal in the book of Revelation, is that we would take it and like a gem, we would look at it from a whole bunch of different angles and begin to prod it and poke it and inspect it to see exactly what it is that John is doing here. Now, as we talk about these four horsemen, first, let's ask the question, who are these four horsemen? So first of all, these horsemen are not from God. And this is a crucial starting point here. These horsemen are not from God. God is not in the business of death and destruction. God has never been in the business of death and destruction. God will never be in the business of death and destruction. God is at work in the world, bringing salvation and healing and wholeness. And so these horsemen, this is crucial that we understand this. These horsemen, they are not from God, but rather the way in which they're agents of God is that God allows these horsemen to roam throughout the earth in order to expose them for who and what they truly are. They're acting as agents of God in the sense that God allows them to roam the earth. God allows them to be on the earth as a way to expose the consequences of war and greed and violence. This is what's happening here. In a sense, God is sort of removing some of the protection to allow for the consequences, to allow for us to see the consequences of our greed and our violence and our need for conquest and power, which is the way of every empire. Every empire starts with violence, and it needs violence to sustain itself. Now, the first horse that comes out is a white horse. And the white horse, it says the rider, he has a bow. And the rider has a crown, which is a crown of victory. White itself is the color of victory. Now, horses in the first century, they were primarily military animals. And what we see here is we see this rider who signifies victory. It actually tells us that the rider burst out of the gates as a conqueror bent on conquest. So what we see right from the start is we see this horse being sent out into the earth, and there's the rider who wants to subdue, who wants to put others under his control, this rider who wants to take power and authority. He wants to assert his force, his way in the world, which in the first century, this would make a whole lot of sense because there were always these warring factions, these warring empires who were vying for land and for power. The story of our history is basically one empire conquering another empire, and then another empire coming in, conquering another one, and there's this never-ending cycle of who has the power, who holds the land, who's wearing the crown. Now, does this not sound a little bit like the world that we live in today as well? Has this rider not been on the earth for the 2,000 years, even after the book of Revelation was written? Whether it's nations today stockpiling weapons, growing their military forces, building and inventing bigger and better weapons so they can wipe out the other nations and assert their force and their power over others, Is this not the reality of the world that we live in today, where we see this rider, we see this white horse all throughout our earth? Or what about in our own lives? How often are we the rider on that white horse? How often are we the one bent on conquest, holding the bow, trying to assert our power, our authority over others around us? Because that's where it starts. It starts in our hearts, and then it slowly expands outward from there. How often do we find ourselves sitting on this white horse, asserting our power over those who we don't deem to be as worthy or as important as we are? Or how often do we find ourselves asserting our power over all those who aren't as deserving as us, those who don't look like us? How often is it that we try to prove ourselves in the ways in which we compete against other people, vying for that crown, so we can show the world that we're the ones on top, that we're the one who's made it, that we're the important one? Yeah, this happens all the time. It happens on a big global national scale, but it happens in our individual lives as well. This is how it starts. It starts with this conqueror bursting out of the gates, bent on conquest. And then we get to this next horse, and we learn how is it that the conqueror conquers. And we come to the fiery red horse. Don't you just love that image? I can just imagine like that horse with beady red eyes just staring you down, grunting, all the steam coming out of its nostrils. And here comes this fiery red horse. And what do we discover about the rider here? He was given a large sword. Not just a sword. He was given a large sword. Pay attention to all the different images that come. It's not just why a large sword? Why not just a sword? Well, because John is telling us something here of deep significance. And he tells us that the rider was actually given the power to take peace from the earth. The harmony, the wholeness, the shalom that exists in the world. This rider was given the power to remove that, to fracture, to split, and was given power to make people kill each other. Yeah, how does the conqueror conquer? Through a sword, through violence, through war, through slaying all those who might stand in the way, by putting under his feet all those who aren't as deserving, all those who might be in the way. Now, let's take a look at a couple of numbers here, and if we go to the next slide. So 1914 to 1918, World War I, 17 million people died in World War I. 17 million people. Now, World War I was said to be the war that would end all wars. This was the part of the propaganda of World War I. If you fight in this war, this will bring peace to the earth. Yet 20 years later, World War II, this time, the death toll more than doubled. Some have estimated about 50 million people died in World War II. Others said the number is actually much higher. It's closer to 80 million people. 80 million people. These are just two of the wars that we've had in the last 100 years, not even 100 years, on the earth. And if we add up the totals, we're looking at close to 100 million people who have died because of violence, because of this need for power, this need to assert ourselves, this need to be on top, this need to conquer. And the really sad part about World War II is that the majority of those deaths, they were actually civilian deaths from bombings and from sieges. These were not battlefield deaths. The majority of people who died World War II were just civilians when nations decided to bomb cities. Yeah, this horse has been let loose on the earth for far too long. And as we see from the awfulness of these numbers. Think of how many families have been torn apart by conflict, by war. Sons, brothers, husbands, fathers who never came home. Homes that were destroyed. Innocent lives, people just going about their business, killed because of this desire, this need to conquer. This is what the red horse brings. And as we have seen a rise in these post-apocalyptic movies, we're actually discovering as a world, our global consciousness, we're becoming more and more aware of the truth that we actually have the capability to destroy life on Earth. We as humanity actually have the power and the capability to wipe out all of life on Earth. I believe this is why you're seeing a rise in these movies that's showing us what a global nuclear war is going to leave us with. And these movies, they serve as a warning, letting us know if we continue on this path, these movies, these books, if we continue on this path, this is where we are going to end up, with no one left. If we don't find another way forward, if we can't find another way to solve our conflict, this is what we're going to be left with. This is the same warning that we're given here in Revelation. God allows these horsemen to roam the earth in order to expose the violence, the consequences of violence and war and conflict and greed that we as humanity often portray. And then we come to a third horse. We come to the black horse. Now the black horse, it says the rider was holding a pair of scales. And the rider was shouting out, 2 pounds of wheat for a day's wages and 6 pounds of barley for a day's wages. So these prices of wheat and barley, way inflated. You can probably get about 10 times the amount of wheat and barley for those prices. Scales. Scales were used in the ancient world in order to weigh grain, especially during time of famine, which was a common occurrence in first century Rome. Actually, there was a grain shortage during every single Roman emperor's reign during the first century, at least one. So this is an image that the readers are very familiar with. Whenever they see the scales, they know, oh, there's a grain shortage. Someone is not going to eat. And now we have the prices are being inflated. 2017, the year that we live in now, we actually have people around the world who are suffering famine. People around the world who are suffering food shortages. If you go to the next slide, I have a picture here that was recently released by the World Economic Forum. And the top picture of Africa, all the circles are areas where famine is possible during 2017. Yeah, this reality still exists in our world today. People not having access to food, people not having access to clean water. People being removed, forcibly being removed from their land just so that they can make a way for themselves and for their family. If you look down at the next image right here, the people in millions who have died over the past 100 years because of famine, because of lack of access to food. And when these numbers, when these images were released, guess what the primary driving force was for why famine exists in the world today? Conflict. Civil war. Warring regimes, people fighting for power, those on top not allowing those that they're supposedly serving to have access to food and water and other necessities for human life to survive. The reason why famine exists, we see this in a book 2,000 years ago, the reason so often famine, food shortages, it's another consequence of war, another consequence of violence. This third horse, this black horse, this rider shows us the ugliness of what war brings. It's not just those who lose their lives on the battlefields. It's not those who lose their lives from bombings, which the number is catastrophic, but it's the greater, the broader upheaval and destruction and loss of life that war brings with it. This black horse comes shouting, two grains, or what is it? Go back a second. Forgotten. 2 pounds of wheat for a day's wages, 6 pounds of barley for a day's wages. This is how it always works. It's the poor who suffer. When those on top hoard and hold on to all the materials and then charge this exorbitant rate that the poor cannot afford. It's, we sang about the least of these. It's the poor, it's those on the bottom, those who already lack, who end up lacking even more. This is what the third horseman brings. Then we get to the fourth, the final horse. And this one is actually a pale green horse, which is the color of death. If you look in the mirror and your face is pale green, you might want to call the doctor. And this is exactly what we're told this horseman brings. Was given the power to kill a quarter of the earth with sword, famine, plague, wild beasts. So this sort of acts as a summation for all that's come before, but then is added on plague, pestilence, and then also wild beasts, who, if you've ever seen any of those post-apocalyptic movies and you see those wolves and the animals all throughout the streets of a city that used to be inhabited, this is the picture that's being given. Because when a city, when a town, when a village is torn apart, it leaves the inhabitants, whoever is left there, open for the wild beasts to come and attack. These were actually the typical ways in which war would bring death. And then it says here that following the rider was Hades. Now, Hades serves as a symbol for godlessness. Hades serves as a symbol for the absence of God, which is exactly what happens when we substitute God's way of living for our way of conquest. The absence of God's presence is exactly what happens when we allow our hearts to get crowded out by our need for power, our desire for conquest, our desire to be on top. This is exactly what happens when we substitute the way of Christ, this way of peace, this way of harmony, this way of love for all people, for the way of the sword. The way of asserting ourselves and clawing our way to the top, regardless of who gets stepped on along the way. Now, after these four horsemen are unleashed upon the earth, we're told that this fifth seal has been opened, and we're given a picture of God gathering his people together. We're being given a picture of God gathering together a group of people who long for a different way of living. It's a beautiful picture of God gathering together all those who believe that a new world is possible. A world of justice, where everyone has access to all they need to survive. A world of harmony. A world of people who, instead of splitting and fracturing and tearing apart, would actually work to bring together. People who would see beauty in this world and people who would actually give their lives rather than hoarding and holding on. People who would actually sacrifice and give their lives to putting this world back together. This is what God has been doing from the beginning of the story. God has been looking for people, for a group of people who will put down the sword, who will put down their need for power, their need for conquest, their need to be on top, and will show love and grace to the world. People who will give their lives to ensuring that we all move forward together as a global community that we all flourish and that we all have what we need to survive. This is what God is doing. Now, I understand sometimes we think, well, this is really big and we're floating up here at the 50,000 mile altitude, however high up, 50,000 feet. I guess 50,000 miles would be in outer space. So oftentimes it seems like we're so high up here and we wonder, well, what can I do? How can I ever begin to change the system? How can I ever have a role to play in seeing that the world moves forward in a different direction? The way it starts is it starts with you in your daily life. It starts with you. Instead of lashing out at that person for what they've done to you, it starts with forgiving. It starts in your heart. Instead, when your friend says that thing that really ticks you off, instead of digging the knife in and saying the thing that you know will make them look bad in front of everyone else, it starts with you holding your tongue. It starts with you sacrificing rather than hoarding and holding on and keeping everything for yourself. It starts by living this sacrificial life so that others can have. It starts one step at a time because it starts in your heart and then it slowly expands outward from there. It starts with you showing care and concern for your neighbors, for your coworkers, for the people that you rub shoulders with each and every day. It starts one step at a time. It starts when one person or when a group like this group here calls out the insanity that we see in the world around us and says, we are going to show the world that there is a new and different way to be human. It starts with a group like this who says, we believe that a whole other world is possible. We believe that a resurrection world is possible because we believe that a resurrection has taken place and that we're actually being invited to be partners with God in participating in this resurrection world that's bursting forth all around us. It starts when we take serious this call for justice, this call to be a force of good and a force of love for the world. This is what Jesus was doing with his life. This is what Jesus was teaching, that we would be people who would put down the sword, put down our need for power, put down our need to be on top, put down our need to grip and claw and hold everything tightly to our chest, and who would live in this way of giving love away, who would live in this way of showing grace and mercy and truly believing that a different world is possible. I'm going to pray. We're going to sing one more song. God, I thank you for this book. God, I thank you for these images. God, I thank you for these images that bother us. God, these images that rattle us. These images that they knock us off our seat. God, they make us think. God, these images that wake us up. And God, I pray that as we sit with these horsemen, God, that as we see them for who they really are, for who they truly are, these instruments of destruction and devastation and havoc, God, I pray that we would be a people who would in our lives take steps to bring healing to the world. God, that we would be people who instead of fracturing and instead of splitting apart, would be people who would be at work partnering with your spirit to bring wholeness and healing to the world around us. So I pray that each one of us this week, God, that we would be people of love. God, that we would put down our need for violence or to prove anything, to compete against others, and that we would be people who would live sacrificially. God, that we would be people who would live, who would give our lives in the hope, in the belief that you're creating a different world, a resurrection world, and that we've been invited to step into that world and to show others what that world looks like. So, God, I pray for this community. God, I pray that we would be a community that would show others a different way, the way of grace and mercy. So we ask all this in the name of Jesus. Amen.